Thanks very much for that entertaining introduction, Jack. A little bit about myself. I've written several books on the drug trade. In fact, I've got a cannabis trilogy. First one was Marijuana Australiana, which is cannabis use, popular culture, and the Americanisation of drugs policy in Australia, 1938 to 1988. That was my MA, or began as my MA. I was interested in writing a history of cannabis prohibition in Australia. Originally, I'd actually proposed to write a history of cannabis in Australia because I'm sort of a green historian, and my heroes tend to be not so much people as plants, and particularly the genus cannabis. So I was unfortunately knocked back on that. That was said to be too big even for a PhD. And so I was sort of cut back to just looking at cannabis prohibition, 1938 to 1988. Eventually, though, I was able to write the history of the early history of cannabis in Australia and in the English-speaking world, which is in the book Sir Joseph Banks and the Question of Hemp. Sir Joseph Banks, I discovered, was a cannabis zealot like myself, and that he'd written sort of reports on cannabis and hemp for the British government during the time of the Napoleonic Wars. Banks wasn't just the person who came out with Cook for Australia. Banks was the presiding genius of Britain. He was the great advisor to the British government. He advised them not just on the settlement of Australia. He advised them on all sorts of things, including naval policies and what they could do for naval supplies. At that stage, hemp was the most important plant on the planet because hemp was the basis for sail, it was the basis for rope, so that in the age of sail, hemp performed more or less the same function that oil performs in our age. It was what wars revolved around, it was what government policies revolved around. And just as you have the greatest minds of our time sort of being concerned with oil, in the age of sail, the greatest mind in England, which was Sir Joseph Banks, was investigating hemp. The third book in the trilogy is The Killer Cop and the Murder of Donald Mackay. As I said, I started off doing a history of cannabis prohibition in Australia. And when you do that, you discover there's this enormous black hole in Australian history, which is the murder of Donald Mackay. And it links to this other great sort of black hole in Australian history, which is the Nugan-Hand Bank. And there is a wormhole which connects these two black holes. And that's the territory I explore, and which is the subject of The Killer Cop and the Murder of Donald Mackay. Most of the stuff in the newspapers at the moment is evidence-free and counterfactual. I hate reading it, and I'm avoiding reading it. I'm about to go to Griffith in a week's time to talk about the murder and what actually happened on the night of the murder, because about a year ago I was contacted by a witness who disappeared from the scene, but who was able to fill in a lot of the details of it. And so I'm leaving talking about the murder of Donald Mackay till I get to Griffith in a week's time. But it is Donald Mackay gets murdered by the Mr. Biggs of the Australian drug trade. The Mr. Biggs of the Australian drug trade are not the farmers of Griffith, the marijuana growing farmers of Griffith. They're the sort of peasant growers of the trade. And above them, there's this whole network of banks which exchange the money and sort of distributors. And at the top of that network, the person who is more at the centre of the drug trade in Australia than anyone has ever been is a man called Frank Nugan. And so the book's about the connection between Frank Nugan, the Nugan-Hand Bank, Griffith, and Donald Mackay. And the latest, my latest production, I haven't got out here, but it's out on the table. It's called How Many Cones, How Many Pills, How Many Lines of Coke. It's a report on the size and value of the Australian illicit drug trade. When I was researching the drug trade, I discovered the works of Dr. Alfred McCoy, who's written books such as The Politics of Heroin. And Dr. McCoy always used to, well, what I gained from Dr. McCoy, the really valuable thing where I ceased to be just someone doing an MA but capable of writing a PhD, was the idea that to understand the drug trade, you have to understand drugs as a commodity. And you have to understand the trade, you have to understand the size of it and its value. And so that's what I became interested in. How do you estimate the size of an invisible black market? And it took me several years, and it was there's a whole section in my PhD devoted to this. It's called History by Numbers. And while I was doing that, I learned how, well, I became world class in estimating the size of illicit drug markets. I've written encyclopedia articles on the subject. I've written award-winning academic papers on the subject. And for the first time, the paper, How Many Cones, How Many Pills, How Many Lines of Coke, is my attempt to estimate the size of the Australian illicit drug trade to the nearest million lines of coke, the nearest million pills, the nearest 100 million cones of cannabis. And that's what the report is about, because once you get an idea of the size and value of the illicit drug trade, you can get some idea of how much money would be garnered by the federal treasury if it were to tax and regulate drugs just as they regulate other commodities. And so, okay, talking about the size of the illicit drug trade, most of us have no idea, and when I started off, I had no idea whether Australia's drug cannabis market was, you know, 2 tonnes, 10 tonnes, 100 tonnes, 1,000 tonnes, etc. And the only idea of that we get is in the sort of regular reports we get in the newspapers about sort of drug busts, which the police will put in, and they'll sort of boast about the, you know, their fabulous success, how many $100 million worth of drugs they've seized. And these are quite enormous. Like in the 9 month period I looked at, and I was just using the ABC website, there were over 500 stories about drugs and, you know, drug arrests. And I started, you know, categorising these. I divided, I got a system of categorisation or categories, which sort of ranged from what I called monster seizures. Monster seizures are seizures which are claimed to be over $250 million worth. Massive were the ones which were put in, had a street value between $50 million and $250 million. Then I had enormous, which was $10 million to $50 million. And then I just had big, which was $1 million to $10 million. And in the period which I looked at, which was possibly the last 9 months or so of the current financial year, there were two monster seizures over $250 million. The first of these was occurred on the 30th of July 2012, and it was 558 kilos of drugs, which consisted of 306 kilos of methamphetamine, 206 kilos of heroin. The 306 kilos of methamphetamine was the largest seizure of methamphetamine ever in Australia. And the 252 kilos of heroin was said at the, in the newspaper reports to be the third largest seizure. I'm not sure, it may only be the fifth largest, but anyway, certainly it's up there, 252 kilos of heroin. And it, all up, it sort of came to an estimated street value of 500 million. And at the time, the police put out a statement commenting on this monster seizure. Australian Federal Police Deputy Commissioner Andrew Colville talked up the success of the AFP. This operation follows the AFP, this is what he said, this operation follows AFP's most successful year in terms of drug seizures. In the 2011-12 financial year, the AFP and its partner agencies seized almost 14 tonnes of illicit substances bound for drug distribution networks across Australia. They've actually revised it up to 23 tonnes because there was a seizure of 11 tonnes of hypophosphorus acid, which they've since added to it. So it's now 23 tonnes. So if you look at the sort of seizures they've claimed for this year alone, and we haven't quite reached the end of this financial year, they claim their seizures on the financial year because they report to Parliament. And a financial year. Yes, well, this year alone they've claimed $2 billion worth of illicit drugs seized. So that's, you know, giving you some idea of how big the industry is. I mean, the police are claiming they claim $2 billion. And you have to ask yourself the question, the police keep spinning out this story of their fantastic success there, having we've seized $2 billion worth of illicit drugs. But think, the only reason they're seizing that many is because there's that many around. And the story isn't really a story of police success, it's a story of a country which is swimming in a sea of illicit drugs. Anyway, below these two monster seizures, there were five massive seizures, which is the 50 million to 250 million those. And they were in stories like 77 million cocaine rings smashed, AFP. Foreign nationals arrested over 237 million drug seizure. Trio charged over 50 kilogram heroin drug bust. Joint police operation nets 200 kilograms of cocaine in shipwreck, along with a sort of related story, body on Tonga drug yachts identified. And there was another story about 300 kilos of cocaine seized in Bundaberg, which was estimated 170 million, but which I found very little publicity about, so I don't know much about that story. If you looked at cannabis seizures are never really big in terms of they don't reach the massive or monster, categories. They're really just enormous, you know. And there were the two biggest cannabis seizures in that period were in the enormous category. The biggest of all was the annual police helicopter raid on the north coast of New South Wales. And every year the police helicopter goes over the alternative communities and over northern New South Wales. It ranged from November 2012 to April 2013. Started off in the New England area, ended up around Coffs Harbour. They always fly over Nimbin around about February the 6th, my friends in Nimbin tell me. And this has happened ever since 1981. And this is the biggest anti-marijuana action in Australia. They claim they seized 14,000 plants in that. The next biggest was one of 6,000 plants, which was just one property in northern Victoria. After the North Coast operation, Drug Squad Commander Superintendent Nick Bingham stated it yielded almost 14,000 plants, valued it at $25 million. And he said, "Our aim is to disrupt the supply chain, to go and find and pull as many plants as we can and get that cannabis off the street and hopefully either drive prices up or keep prices stable, and that will discourage people, we hope." Now, that's interesting because that is an admission that you really do need massive police operations like that just to maintain the price of cannabis. And one of the things you discover when you investigate the drug trade or is that it's the thing which creates the value of the drug trade is what we spend on drug law enforcement. Every dollar we spend on drug law enforcement is worth $10 to the black market. You know, hippies used to joke that the drug squad was a price maintenance squad for organised crime. Now that's true. The drug squad are the price maintenance squad for organised crime. It's the effect of all those police and prisons and jails sort of pressing down which creates the value of the market. And you, a bit of a diversion here, but when I first sort of started investigating the, you know, the cost of drug law enforcement, I noticed that if you multiplied it by four, you got the value of the cannabis black market. And that puzzled me. I just couldn't understand why what we spend on drug law enforcement is a multiplier for the cannabis black market. But ultimately, I began to understand that, you know, why this happens. It's, as I said, it's that effect that it's that the weight of police and prisons, etc., pressing down that creates the value of the market because it drives up price. What I discovered, and this is what I call Jiggins' law. Jiggins' law is this. Price in the illicit drug market varies with the regime of prohibition. Regime of prohibition is the measure, is the way I measure prohibition. The way you get it is you divide the number of drug offences by the number of 1,000 drug users. So the actual unit is arrest per 1,000 drug users. And once you know the regime of prohibition, you can sort of track that because you can measure it. You just have to divide drug offences by a number of users. And that follows the price. The price varies with the regime of prohibition. So that's what you achieve with drug law enforcement. You force up price. You don't discourage use. You simply force up price. And as a consequence, the corollary of Jiggins' law, that price varies with the regime of prohibition, is that every dollar you spend on drug law enforcement is worth $10 to the black market. So, very quickly getting through this, because we're running out of time, what I've done in my paper, how many cones, how many pills, how many lines of coke, is to estimate the size of the Australian illicit drug market. Now, starting off with ecstasy first, I estimate the size, well, of the ecstasy market to be 40 million pills, worth about 1,400 million. Now, there are about, 600,000 sort of regular ecstasy users in Australia, or people who use ecstasy in the past year. So that the ecstasy market is about 600,000 users, 40 million pills, $1,400 million street value. If you look at the cocaine market, cocaine is the market which is most expanding in Australia. One of the things which happened in 2009 was something called the global MDMA crisis. There was a crisis in supply of safrole oil, which is the basic ingredient for MDMA, which is the supposedly what is in ecstasy. And as a consequence of that, you know, ecstasy pills in Australia became filled with adulterants. There wasn't any methylene dioxy methamphetamine anymore to put in, so they put in things like piperazines, they put in methamphetamines, etc. The ecstasy around Australia became adulterated, and there was a move away from ecstasy. Ecstasy sort of declined in use in Australia between 2007 and 2010 as a result of this crisis, and there was a move towards cocaine. So ecstasy fell as a result of the crisis in precursor supplies, which happened, but cocaine rose in proportion. And cocaine is now the sort of rising drug in Australia. The interesting thing about cocaine is it's almost decriminalised in Australia. If you look at the number of arrests for cocaine versus other drugs, of what I call the relative regime of prohibition, if you divide the number of cocaine arrests by the number of cocaine users, compare it with the number of cannabis arrests per cannabis users, the regime of prohibition of cocaine is 2.1 arrests per 1,000 users. Now with cannabis, the arrest rate is 30.1 arrests per 1,000 users. In other words, we press down 15 times as hard on cannabis as we do on cocaine. And there's no rational explanation for that, because if you're going to say, oh, we do that because cannabis is a more dangerous drug, well, no, cocaine's much more addictive. Cocaine is more dangerous because you can have fatal overdoses on cocaine, but you can't with cannabis. So you've got to ask yourself, why does this happen? Why is cocaine almost decriminalised in Australia? And the only explanation seems to be class. If you look at who uses cocaine and versus who uses other drugs, cocaine is used by the top socioeconomic bracket 4 times as much as by the lower economic bracket. And you'll find that basically there is this class thing with cocaine. It's the sort of wealthy and successful people who are using cocaine. Cocaine is used by lawyers, admin and people like that. Methamphetamine is used by bikies. So the police crack down on methamphetamine. They don't crack down on cocaine. So cocaine's the rising drug in the market. It's used by about 390,000 Australians. It's my estimated size of the market is 4.7 tonnes. This equates to 94 million lines of coke, because as we all know, there are 50 milligrams of coke in a line of coke. That equates to $2.5 billion street value for the cocaine market. If you look at methamphetamines, there's been a series of amazing busts for methamphetamines in the past 2 years. In the past year, we've seen the largest methamphetamine bust of all time, the second largest and the fourth largest methamphetamine bust. I've talked about the previous highest bust, which was the 306 kilos seized in July the 30th, 2012. Well, that lasted as a record for about 9 months before there was an even bigger seizure, this time of 585 kilos, which was put at a street value of, I think, $440 million by the police. And that was the second monster seizure in the period I was talking about, was the second record methamphetamine seizure. Now, in between those two, there was another one of 235 kilos, which was the fourth largest. So if you look at the figures the population figures estimated from what's the National Drug Strategy Household Survey, it's shown a declining methamphetamine use from 2001 to 2010. They're going to do another study this year in 2013, so it's going to be interesting, and I don't know what that's going to show. So it's a bit strange that we've seen such huge amounts of methamphetamine flooding into the country. Anyway, so the estimated size of the methamphetamine market is 6.8 tonnes, and its estimated size is $5 billion. Cannabis. Cannabis is the oldest drug. It's the sort of oldest illicit drug in Australia. It's been sort of the cannabis explosion happens circa 1970, and that's when the cannabis plague sort of starts. The cannabis is the most widely used illicit drug in Australia. There are about 2 million cannabis users. About 250,000 Australians use cannabis daily. Estimated size of the market is a bit difficult. Cannabis, I find the hardest market to estimate because if you read my paper, I'll explain this, but cannabis is a bit difficult to estimate. I put it at about 150 tonnes. Other people put it at 300 tonnes. Normally, I would say I'm better than the other estimates, but in this one, as the paper explains, my method doesn't work. I triangulate between seizure figures and estimates from population to get my figures. And seizure figures with cannabis are difficult because with cannabis, the seizure figures are given in terms of number of plants seized and number of ounces seized. And you've got to convert number of plants seized into number of ounces seized. And that's very difficult to do, so I don't bother with it. So anyway, I find I can't estimate the cannabis market as accurately as I can other markets. Anyway, so it's 150 to 300 tonnes, round about 6 billion, everyone sort of estimates. I estimated it at 3 billion. Other people estimated it at 6 billion. The Australian Bureau of Statistics is attempting to sort of work out the black market. They estimated it at about $5 to $7 billion worth of value for the cannabis market. So I take a sort of figure of 6 billion to be this, you know, sort of where everyone would tend to agree. So I'm less confident on the value of the cannabis market. Heroin, the heroin market's reviving. There was a sort of heroin shortage in Australia in 2001. Traditionally, Australia sources its heroin from Southeast Asia, and there's been a move away from heroin production and opium growing in Southeast Asia to Afghanistan as a result of the Afghanistan war. And Afghanistan has been dominating heroin production in the past decade, and production of heroin and opium in Southeast Asia has declined. So that, and that's at the core. And because we get our heroin from Southeast Asia, we don't get much from Afghanistan. Afghanistan heroin goes through the ex-Soviet republics and Iran and through out towards Europe. Whereas the Southeast Asian trade goes to Australia, goes across to Canada, etc. For those reasons, heroin use in Australia declined, but it started to revive in the past 3 years. And the next, once the results are out for this year, the three largest years for heroin production of the past decade are going to be the past three. I estimate the size of the heroin market at 2 tonnes, street value 2 billion. All up, I estimate the size of the Australian illicit drug market at $17 billion, which is, and as I said, the police are claiming $2 billion, so that's, I think, pretty much consistent with what their claims for seizures are. Now, the thing about that $17 billion is that's the size of the alcohol industry. The alcohol industry is worth about $17 billion. If you look at the amount of tax the alcohol industry pays, the alcohol industry is estimated to pay $7,600,000,000 this year. That's from the what's called DISCA, the distilled IS. I forget what the acronym is, but it's DISCA, which is a sort of peak body for the alcohol manufacturers. They claim that this financial year they'll pay $7 billion in tax from their $18 billion industry. Similarly, if the illicit drug market was regulated in a similar way to which alcohol is regulated, you could expect something like $7.6 billion from them because they're a similar size industry. Okay, last of the statistics is how many times are the drug laws broken in Australia? Well, I estimate that the drug laws in Australia are broken something like 2,500 million times a year. Now, that's your 2,400,000